Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2017, Episode 11. Now, since we talked last, a lot has happened in the world we know as Husker Nation. Sean Eichhorst fired as athletic director. Huskers then go on to beat Rutgers to open the Big Ten season. This is the podcast that puts the fun in dysfunction. This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice, and with me once again is former Husker, who is also opinionated, but yet thoughtful, the one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadiska.
How are you doing? I try to be thoughtful.
Has anybody ever called you opinionated before?
Not relative to you, no.
No, I do think you're thoughtful. Though you're very...
I've got opinions. I'd like to think they're reasonably well thought out. And if somebody gives me, I would think of a reasonable reason to think otherwise, I'm willing to change my mind.
Now, you were very active on Twitter over the weekend, especially during the game when Nebraska was beating Rutgers. Fell behind early, but then came back, won the football game. But it's in your most honest opinion that Rutgers just... not a very good football team. So that would make Nebraska not a very good football team.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to follow, you know, I kind of mentioned somebody made the comment on Twitter that they referenced the whole, well, Rutgers only lost by 14 points. And I did have to tell them it was actually by 16. But Rutgers only lost by a couple of touchdowns to Washington in Seattle. And I'm like, well, yeah, but that whole... A beats B, B beats C doesn't mean A beats C mentality doesn't always carry through. And I'm not saying that means Nebraska's a horrible team, but, well, they're not horrible yet, I guess. We got a lot of football left to be played. It was a good, solid win. I saw a lot of people, media side mainly, after the game kind of pat Nebraska on the back and, oh my God, you guys got this, and the ship's been righted, the sails are billowing, and we got a smooth track ahead. And I'm sitting here going, you beat the crap. It wasn't even beating the crap. You had a reasonably solid win over a team that's just not good. They are really, really not good. When you watched them in person, Rutgers was not particularly fast. They're okay coached. Sorry about your boy, Chris Ash. But they're not that well coached. I saw absolutely nothing special from them. Completely unable to mount a rushing attack. Their passing game was so-so. And, you know, Nebraska's defense did pretty well against them, especially considering that Nebraska's defensive backfield is just absolutely depleted right now. But they shut down a very bad offense. And Rutgers' defense, which, you know, I heard a couple people say, well, they've played pretty salty the last couple weeks. No, Northern Illinois played salty defense. What you saw from Rutgers was not a salty defense. It was, again, pretty plain Jane. They were unable to get much pressure on Tanner Lee, which, if you look at the last few games, is darn near shocking. He threw a couple of absolute gift interceptions for his nation-leading ninth interception. But it was a defense that just kind of sort of sat there and kind of dared Nebraska to beat them up with a power running game, essentially because Rutgers' defense was capable of doing nothing else. Except sort of standing there. Nebraska just kind of battered them with a power running game, and it was okay. I mean, it's not like I was sitting there going, oh, my God, Nebraska's offense is just gashing these guys with the running game. They're playing okay.
You know, I guess I came away impressed because it would have been easy after the week that happened with Sean Eichhorst getting fired. That team could have folded. They could have said, you know what, the university has sent us a message. We're going to go through this again. And it would have been easy to quit.
Mentally, they hung in there actually pretty well. I will give them that. That from a mental aspect in a week with a lot of distractions, I thought they did pretty well again. I think it underscores how bad a team Rutgers is.
That means that we are drinking a beer. Drink a beer, everybody.
Infusion Brewing Company, the official beer provider of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. Tonight, We are drinking the C3PL. It's a pale lager. Infusion took mild-mannered lager and crammed it full of Cascade and Chinook and Centennial hops. Orange-hued with subtle malt tones, this pale lager has a bright, crisp aroma, hoppy punch, 6.7% alcohol by volume. This is really good. You know, and I'm not...
Do you like it?
I do.
I like it, but it's... I don't know. This is a little hoppier than some of the other ones we've had. I like the fact that they took... Normally, you hop an ale up. You don't take a lager and get it this hoppy. I mean, this is... There's a hint of lager to it. I mean, I don't know. I drink a lot of beer. I probably should say that.
See, you're a beer connoisseur. Now, Danielle, who I work with at Infusion Brewing, as we set up these on a weekly basis, says she's basically got a beer crush on this beer right now. It's like her favorite one, because I write her and say, hey, which one do you want us to try? And she gives us some ideas, and she said she's absolutely loving this beer. And I think it's the orange citrusy hue that I like. I can taste.
I like the fact that it's different in the sense that they took a lager and got it. It's pretty hoppy. I mean, this is, you know, we talk about hops give it kind of that bitterness taste, the bitterness to the beer. And if you like it, it's not overpowering. But this is hoppier than a lot of the other beers we've gotten from Infusion, and I do like it.
I would agree.
I'm surprised you do, just because you usually don't like the really hoppy stuff.
Because maybe I don't think it's that hoppy as to the point where it's like that, to the point where it's unbearable. And maybe it's just because Infusion has done such a great job of getting me accustomed to different style of beers, because Infusion beer is like the best craft beer in Nebraska. And when you drink the best week after week,
it is pretty good.
So I can tell you, if you want to try some great fall beers from Infusion, their fall festival coming up this weekend at the Southwest location. Check it out at the website, infusionbrewing.com. That's infusionbrewing.com. Infusion Brewing, the official beer provider of the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. And time now for our Remington Trophy Watchlist Spotlight. This week, we're talking about Nick Allegretti from Illinois. You're going to see him this weekend. He's 6'4", 320-pound junior. So far this season, he's on the AFCA Good Works Team watch list, the Remington Award watch list. He's got two starts at guard this year, one at center. So he can play, he can go back and forth.
Guard last year.
Yes.
I mean, this is a guy who can kind of move around a little bit. He looks like a prototypical interior offensive lineman. Little, you know, you kind of normally don't think of centers as the big 6'4", 6'5", guys. This is a huge man. This is a guy, I think, who probably has a chance to have some postseason honors. You know, the first several guys that we looked at, good ball players, you know, you put out a watch list, there's going to be 60 guys on the freaking watch list for any award.
That's true.
There just is. This is the first guy that I've looked at. When you look at what he's done, where he's came from, the tools he's got in the toolbox, this is the first guy that I've looked at where I've thought, okay, this guy, I don't know if he's remotely near my favorite in terms of winning the Remington Trophy, but he's a guy who I think you could see up there for some postseason honors.
And that's why I kind of brought him up. He was voted captain by his teammates for the first 3 weeks. Now, you mentioned usually centers aren't that big. He's versatile. He plays guard. He plays center. Is guard his natural position in the National Football League if he goes that route?
I could see a team taking him and putting him in either spot. This is a guy who's pretty darn effective at center. See how it goes here. I mean, he's athletic enough. Here's the thing I like about him. He's got a background in wrestling. And the guys who wrestle end up having just incredible balance and footwork. You can never get these guys off their feet. Tanner Farmer for Nebraska spent a year with Nebraska's wrestling team. Most improvement I saw out of him was after he did that. Now, he's had some injuries last year that kind of slowed him down after that. But the fact that this guy has that in his background, he's an exceptional, exceptional athlete for as big of a guy as he is, and plays with a lot of balance, again, for a really big man. you don't see that out of the big guys all the time, and I think that's why I like them.
Hey, when Husker fans need tickets, they turn to a source that they've counted on for 25 years. That's Ticket Express. Games, concerts, theater. If an event has a ticket, Ticket Express can get you in. For more information, go to TicketExpress.com. And when Husker fans need to wear red, wear black, wear white, they go to Husker Hounds for the latest fashions and collectibles. Three locations in the Omaha area and online at HuskerHounds.com. Time now for listener email, and boy, do we have a lot tonight. We're going to start things off with Morgan, who has a two-part question. Number one, how come the O-line coaches in college aren't the second highest-paid coaches on Power 5 teams? And two, with the often criticized desire for the olden days, how would Dave Remington succeed as the athletic director where Tom Osborne did not succeed as the AD? So let's tackle the first one first that Morgan asked. How come O-line coaches aren't the second highest-paid coaches in Power 5 teams?
I always thought they should be.
It's rank. It goes head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and then everybody else.
And usually it's kind of the next up-and-coming O coordinator or D coordinator. Offensive line coaches is kind of a special breed because the only guys who coach offensive line are guys who want to coach offensive line. I'll go to my grave saying that Milt Tenneper was kind of the behind-the-scenes offensive coordinator for Nebraska. Nobody knew Osborne's offense better than he did. Dan Young's a close second behind that. It's just those guys coach offensive line, and that's all they coach because it's what they want to do. They do not want to be head coaches. They do not want to be offensive coordinators. They want to coach offensive line, and it's sort of a self-regulating situation where they've relegated themselves to being that and nothing more than that, but that's what they want. I think in terms of how an offense runs from a coordinating standpoint, again, I would put it out there that most offensive linemen probably, or offensive line coaches, have a better feel for how an offense runs and how it should run than the offensive line coach does. When a play breaks down, those guys will always know exactly where it breaks down. But I think a lot of it's just to be able to do it and to be able to do it well, you really have to want to do it. And the guys who want to do it bad enough to succeed at that level, they don't want to do anything else. It's just kind of it's what's in their nature.
And how about the
second part?
Yeah, the Dave Remington as the how would Dave succeed as an AD? And full disclosure, Dave sponsors this podcast. It's the Remington, sponsored by the Remington Trophy. I reached out to Dave, said, hey, you want to do a Skype interview with us tonight? I haven't heard from Dave. Of course, it was reported the university reached out to him on an interim basis.
It got reported he was it. It got that the interim.
Yes.
I think that one got sprung a little bit early. I'm willing to bet he did get reached out to. I don't know if he wants it. I think it's something that he's mulling over. I know at one time it seemed like he really did. I thought you go back to when Peterson got fired. To my understanding, casual conversations we've had with Dave, both you and I know Dave pretty well, he kind of indicated at that time it was something he really would have liked to have had.
I think Dave would succeed.
The scary thing is that was 10 years ago.
That's true.
When Peterson got fired. So I think he would do well from an running an organization standpoint, running a multi-million dollar organization standpoint. I think he would do very well. He's an incredible people person. His ability to interact with people from multiple backgrounds is incredible. We'll go out and eat dinner with him down at Shucks, and we're talking
3-hour dinners.
We're also talking the downtown Shucks. I mean, you'll have people walking in, walk up to him, and it's like, hey, my dad knew your mom from high school, blah, 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 whatever. He'll sit and chat with those people for 20 minutes. He knows everybody.
Listen, I think Dave Remington would be an absolute great athletic director. I don't think people are familiar enough with Dave and what he does.
I don't think they are, and I think it surprises people when they find that out. I had a conversation with, I'm gonna just put this out there. So Jack Stark, former team psychologist for the athletic department down in Lincoln, brilliant, brilliant guy and a very good friend of mine. You know, we were just kind of chatting over just sort of a casual conversation. About, what do you think of this stuff? What do you think about Remington, this and that? Even Jack didn't realize that about Remington in terms of the fact that Remington's run that organization for Boomer for all of these years. Just a lot of people really don't know that about the guy. Now, yeah, you ask that question in the sense of how would Dave succeed where Osborne didn't.
I thought Osborne succeeded.
Okay, you got to understand the absolute disaster of a department that Osborne walked into. And I think Osborne did a very good job. You know, you can bitch and moan all you want about Pelini.
The guy won.
I think it was the hire Nebraska needed at the time. I don't think Pelini developed.
That's fair.
As well as Osborne would have hoped he would have developed as a head coach. It was Pelini's first head coaching job, other than a game or two as an interim. But I don't think he developed. At the time Osborne made that hire, I think it was the best hire available. We've talked about some of the other guys, Jim Groh, Paul Johnson, guys who, for whatever reason, it wasn't going to work out, wanted to bring all their staff to Lincoln. And maybe Osborne should have said, okay, we're going to hire this guy as the head coach and you get to pick your staff. And maybe that would have been the better decision. I think Osborne, if he's got a fault, it's loyalty. Now, I think the Tim Miles hire, again, at the time he made it.
Looked good.
It looked good. It was maybe a little bit of a stab, but that was an up. That was the Scott Frost of college basketball. It was kind of a young up and coming guy who had success at kind of a mid major program who looked like he was maybe ready to take that next step. I think keeping Connie Yorey on was a great move. I still don't know all the ins and outs of Connie Yorey getting fired. It was one of these things, situations where sort of a You hear these allegations of abuse, and I really kind of wonder about it, because if it was, how come there wasn't any kind of criminal investigation? Is this? I mean, she was a highly successful and highly regarded basketball coach who had a ton of support from two different respected athletic directors in this state. To this day, I still kind of wonder why Connie Yorey got fired. I don't think Osborne was, you say, where he failed. I think Osborne held together an athletic department that was just in complete disarray after the Steve Peterson era.
I would agree with you. Hey, Ticket Express wants to know who you think is going to be the next athletic director. Just go to TicketExpress.com. Have a little bit of fun. They want to know your two choices are Larry the Cable Guy, who was one of the first to call for the firing of Sean Eichhorst, or Trev Alberts, who now seems to be the media darling amongst all newspaper writers and Jason Peter and others. By participating in the Ticket Express poll, you know, you can register to win two club seats to the Wisconsin-Nebraska game on October 7th. Both of these guys have some cars, and remember, you know, Larry the Cable Guy's Mater in cars, and didn't Trev Alberts have the Husker NASCAR? Remember the Husker NASCAR?
Oh, my gosh. It's going back a few years.
Hey, Kevin in Pasadena doesn't have a question, but rather a comment. Thank you for your comments on Episode 10. I've been saying it for years, dating back to the Coach Solich era, that Harvey Perlman was the root of the collapse of the program. You guys are the first ones I've heard publicly call him out. Your presentation of the facts of what that guy did were spot on. I have no love lost for Harvey Perlman. And I can tell you, Harvey Perlman is a classic example of why tenure is bad in higher education. Jason is going to the coaching question. What are your thoughts on Les Miles at AD and then Brett Bielema as head coach?
Ooh.
No. No.
I think Bielema, as long as he was following the Barry Alvarez formula as he was instructed to do at Wisconsin, he looked great. He's been a okay coach at Arkansas.
He's going to get fired at Arkansas. They lost it. You know, they lost to Texas A&M in overtime. They aren't happy in Pig Suey Land. The only problem is they owe him about $15 million to fire him after the season.
Wow.
Let me tell you.
I should have gone into coaching.
Les Miles, listen.
Les Miles, he'd be interesting as a coach.
But not an AD.
He's got no experience. And, you know, this isn't the first time I've heard this thrown out there as Les as an AD. So I'm kind of wondering where these rumors are coming from. Again, you got a guy with zero athletic department administrative experience. I mean, I'd be more interested in somebody, and I'm not saying let's all pile on the Trev Alberts bandwagon, but Trev Alberts, Jamie Williams.
You know who I want?
Paul Myers.
I know. And Paul Myers has been out there. I know this is going to drive people nuts.
Who do you want?
I want Jamie Pollard from Iowa State.
I freaking love Pollard.
Jamie Pollard is one hell of an AD.
I think he's an excellent, excellent AD.
I mean, look at what he does. Because you know what he does? He establishes a culture. He has a clear vision and expects championships or expects winning. Now, you're going to say Iowa State's number one.
You don't have the culture. There's the problem.
Yeah, I think he's got the culture, but it's just hard to keep coaches there and do that. But they've won in basketball.
I think basketball and wrestling. But it's a bit, you know,
sucked in wrestling, but that's fun.
Yeah, whatever. They're the Kansas of the North. They just are.
Yeah,
you know, it's one of those things at Kansas. All you got to do is keep basketball winning, and you'll be fine. That falls off, you're screwed at KU.
Patrick wants to talk about the quarterbacks. What is wrong with the quarterback spot? As bad as Tanner Lee has been, already worse than Armstrong through 2016, wouldn't you want to have Patrick O'Brien get his shots with a lesser opponent versus throwing him into the Lions then against Wisconsin or Ohio State?
I'm kind of curious as to what the problem is with Patrick O'Brien. Now, I've asked that question a lot of times about a lot of players, especially some of the younger offensive linemen we haven't seen. An example of that will be, I think it's going to be an absolute travesty if Michael Decker ever comes away from that center position. I am publicly pleading with Kavanaugh, leave him there for the rest of the year, no matter what happens with Cole Conrad or anybody else. Anyway, I think they run so much of a pro-style practice. There's not a lot of contact. There's not a lot of competition within practice. I think once the starters even remotely have a starting position nailed down, I think they get all the repetitions, there's no evaluation of anybody else after that. I doubt Patrick O'Brien's getting enough quality reps in practice for them to even insert him into a game from a preparation standpoint. Now, I know the coaches always say everybody's prepared and everybody's mentally ready to go, but I guarantee you Tanner Lee's taken 98.5% of the snaps in practice. It's when I'm watching those games, you know, okay, so when everybody was booing during the game, and it was loud and it was noticeable, when Tanner had thrown, I think it was after his first interception, might have been the second. I'm kind of losing track of it at this point. There's so many, they just run all together now. Fans booed when he came back out onto the field. You know, I heard a couple of other members of the media make the point, okay, you know what, you don't have to create a quarterback controversy. That's fine. Name Tanner Lee as still being the starter. You know what? Maybe he's a little rattled. We just got to cool him off a little bit. We're going to put Patrick O'Brien in for a couple of series. I think they are so seriously worried about what Patrick O'Brien's going to do when he gets out there on the field. Like I said, I haven't watched him in practice, but I'm seriously concerned that there's a problem with Patrick O'Brien in terms of his productivity and understanding of the offense. I think they really want to redshirt Tristan Jebbia. I do not think they want to put Jebbia out there. I think they want to get through this year with Tanner Lee as the starter. I think next year they want Tanner Lee to again be the starter with Jebbia as the understudy. And then Jebbia is going to start 3 years after that unless Lee absolutely falters. But I think they really want to try and maintain that red shirt for Jebbia.
So Phil has some suggestions for the podcast. You know you've arrived. We're like the female anchors because when I was in television, they'd always send the female anchors the, hey, your hair sucks. Hey, your clothes sucks.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah, all the time. So you know we've arrived when people don't ask questions, but they have suggestions to make the podcast better. Phil says, one, spend more time on the doctor's expertise. That would be offensive line play. Two, others have already discussed the AD ad nauseum. Please don't waste a lot of podcast minutes on this unless you already have something new to say, like inside info from Remington. Three, maybe spend a little less time on beer. That's not going to happen.
What?
Beer is a big, big part of this podcast because we like drinking beer.
I really like
Four, beer. A lot less cursing. Shit, we haven't said any. Oh, there it was.
What the fuck?
The hell is this guy?
Okay, let's go back to number one.
We hardly ever curse.
Listen, cursing is a lot less this year than it was a year ago.
I even warned people on Twitter last week. What was one F bomb and two S bombs?
And you have been cussing more this year than I have been.
Beer.
It is the beer.
It's probably the
but
beer.
But let's go back
and anger
to his first. We'll give him a little. They want to spend time on your offensive line play and your offensive line play. So give us a critique of what you've seen so far, like Decker versus Conrad,
okay,
Farniok
Neville. Okay, I think we're both past Farniok and Neville, and we're here down to Himes. Or Himes, is that how you pronounce J-A-I-M-E-S.
Yes.
I think it's Himes is how he pronounces it. Anyway, you know, he got beat a couple of times in the game, but I thought for the most part at the right tackle spot, he's a freshman. That was the most consistent. Well, and Farniak's a redshirt freshman. But that was the most consistent play we've seen out of the right tackle spot. I think they need to leave him there and just let him develop and grow into that spot. He's going to take some licks as the season goes along. You leave him there and let him grow. I don't think Neville's better. I think Farniok is a guy who could be good, but is going to be better suited at guard.
So there you go.
Now, Farniok, he got just lit up by Northern Illinois. Now, I will say this. Nebraska did
his brother was a hell of an offensive lineman at Iowa
State.
And
I think Farniok will be, too. I just think he needs to cut his hair and get rid of the man bun. That's all I'm saying. He had a fracture in his hand or his wrist during the Northern Illinois that he suffered during the Northern Illinois game. I think that probably didn't help him a whole heck of a lot. I also think the fact that Nebraska's run game was relatively ineffective against Northern Illinois without Trey Bryant. And I think that being the situation, I think Northern Illinois' defensive ends basically just said, screw it, pin their ears back, and went full bore for the quarterback every single play. And it didn't matter what freaking down it was. They went into whatever you want to call it, the leash is off mode. And Farniok kind of paid the price for that. And that's something as an offensive tackle, I know what that's like to face that. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do, especially if you've got a broken hand or a broken wrist. Even worse so when you're a freshman and you don't have some of the experience under your belt in terms of how to deal with that kind of stuff. But I think Himes is the best guy for the job right now at that right tackle spot. I think Farniok's going to be good. I think it's going to be at a guard spot.
So
center position, I've already made clear. I've been talking about Michael Decker for 2 years,
yeah,
why we haven't
been.
Seen him. Last year, Dylan Utter. You will find more guys with a bigger heart, a better work ethic, and less freaking tools in the toolbox to get the job done.
Chris wants to know. Okay, sorry.
I'm just saying you want me to talk about this. I'm going to talk about it. Decker should have been starting last year. He should have been the starter going into this year. I think Cole Conrad as an upperclassman got deference because of that and little else. I think Decker should have been the starter in place of Cole Conrad. I think he's more aggressive. I think he's stronger. I think he's got better fire off the ball on running plays. And I thought I think he's got better feet, better balance, and better lateral movement on pass blocking. There's my opinion on Michael Decker.
If that's not expertise you're looking for, I don't know what is. So there you go, Phil. We gave you what you wanted. Chris wants to know, why do you think Ezigbo has been MIA until game four when he finally sees the field?
I think he's a guy that has absolutely positively lived in the coach's doghouse. And I don't know if it's an attitude thing. I don't know if it's a poor practice habits. I don't know. I mean, some guys just like to show up on game day and can't stand practice. And I've kind of gotten the hint that that's a Zigbo's problem. The guy's hard to bring down. That I think is one of the first carries he had. He literally fell backwards for 8 yards. And all I could think the whole time is zero technique, zero form, zero burst. He doesn't have incredible speed, and he fell backwards for 8 yards. When the guy can fall backwards for 8 yards, maybe you should give him the freaking ball. He's a guy that I just think does not fit the picture of what Ryland Langsdorf want to do, and that's hurt him. Now, one thing in criticism of both Ozigbo and Michael Wilbon, Michael Sevier pointed this out, and it's one of the things that drives me nuts, drives my wife nuts. Anytime my wife has some very specific football pet peeves, and one of them is that when she sees a running back get the handoff, come up to the hole, and start stutter stepping all over the place.
Yeah.
I'm gonna show everybody my moves. I'm gonna drop low, show them my hips.
You know who can do that? Saquon Barkley, but that's about it.
Okay, now here's the difference. Saquon Barkley does it when there's an opponent in the hole directly across from him. These guys are coming up to completely open hole, and all I can think to myself is run, and they won't do it. It's they got to show us their footwork here, show us the dance moves. I don't want to see it. Hit the damn hole because it's going to be gone in about 0.3 seconds. And it is. Just hit the hole. The reason Trey Bryant looked as good as he did that first 2.5 games.
He ran through the hole.
He hits the hole hard. I mean, he's pretty good. He's got reasonable speed. I can tell you watching, Trey Bryant would have been fourth string on any one of those Nebraska teams I played on. And if you want to argue with me, I'll start going through the guys I played with, and you tell me who he would have beat out. But he would have been, at best, a fourth stringer. He doesn't have blazing speed. He's got good speed. I'm not denying that. He's not going to outrun an all-star cornerback to the end zone. But he's got decent speed. He's got decent power. His greatest strength is that he takes the handoff, and he hits the hole incredibly hard with absolutely zero hesitation. And for 99% of the running backs out there, that can make all the difference in the world.
Benjamin wants to know, is the best chance for this team to win for them to go full 2009 Zach Lee-led Huskers, in which they grind it out with run and play good defense? That's not the most appealing option, but it beats losing.
I think it does. I think they've got – well, I say it does beat losing. I think they need to embrace the running game. I think you need to hand it off to Zigbo, hope Trey Bryant gets healthy and stays healthy. And I think they really need to lean on that a lot more heavily than they have. I think they need to become comfortable doing that. It does not have to be the Tommy Armstrong spread option zone read stuff. Take the running plays you've got and just lean hard on them and try and burn clock. Lee's got to get better. If you're going to leave him in there, not do anything else at quarterback, he has to get better. And, you know, I said this over and over and over and over again. He needs to throw the ball on time, and he won't do it. I guarantee you, in front of a pro scout at a combine, at a workout, at a quarterback camp, when you tell him, we need you to make this throw, we need you to make that throw, he can make them perfectly. But when it's a game situation and it's a five-step drop, the moment that fifth step lands on the ground, he's got to throw the ball. You still got to be able to pass effectively. Tommy Armstrong was a very effective passer. Brooke Berenger led the conference in pass efficiency. Those guys could throw the ball. You've got to be able to do it. Scott Frost could throw the ball. You've got to be able to throw the ball and throw it well. And Tanner Lee, he might have a good arm. I said this on Twitter. He's not a very good quarterback, and there's some very basic things he's not doing that are keeping him from being a good quarterback.
And Neil gets the final question of the night, and that is, my screen can come back up. What does Rob think of zone blocking? A defender usually shoots through and blows up the play. How difficult is it? Why does it seldom work? What am I missing?
I think it depends on what kind of offense you're running. I think zone blocking. Okay, hey, in the early to mid-90s, our bread and butter was zone blocking. It's a great blocking scheme. I think it gets a bad rap. You know what? If guys aren't following their assignments and blocking the guys they're supposed to block, guys are going to get through. I'm not sure this is entirely a zone blocking scheme that they're using down in Lincoln right now, but a good zone blocking scheme can be incredibly effective if you know how to do it, if you know how to coach it, and you're running the correct plays with it. But I think it can be a very good scheme. Anything can be good if you run it right. I mean, there's some schemes out there that I think are a little overblown and aren't going to work well. Run and shoot's one of them. You're never going to see the run and shoot again. You're never going to see the veer again. You're probably not going to see the wing tee again. But there, you can take almost any offense and run it and run it well if you know how to run it well. You can take almost any defense and run it and run it well. You can't tell me that the 3-4 is not a good defense. There are plenty of college teams and plenty of NFL teams that just rip the guts out of people running a 3-4 defense. But you got to know how to run it. You got to know how to coach it. And the players got to know how to execute it. Same thing for a 4-3. For the late 1980s, nobody ran a 4-3 because it had this bad reputation. Half a dozen years later, everybody's running a 4-3 because handful of coaches figured out how to run it really well. Charlie McBride ran a 3-4 for the better part of his career and did it pretty darn well. Then he switched to a 4-3 and discovered he was an absolute genius at running the 4-3. And so for the last 6-8 years of his career, he ran a 4-3 when he was probably kicking himself in the butt the whole time going, holy crap, I should have been running this thing for the last 25 years.
See what happens when you send in the listener email. We like to answer questions because really Rob gets to see that. What happens when I drink that much beer?
You've had half a glass, dude. You can call me Bob.
Bob, what's up, Bob? Well, is your first name Robert technically?
It is.
So Bob is technically correct.
It is.
So there you go.
I've got good friends who they only call me Bob.
But we love the listener email because, A, Rob gets a lot more analytical. We get deep into the weeds on things, and it comes from you. And I want everybody to know that we use, unless you get it in late, we use pretty much all the questions that come to us during the week. If you have a question, make sure to send it to doctalksports@gmail.com. That's doctalksports@gmail.com. You can also ask questions on Twitter by following Dr. Rob at Twitter at doctalksports. So the Huskers on the road Friday night at Illinois. First of all, do you like the Friday night game?
Not my fave. Well, here's the thing. I've either got work going on, kids stuff going on, youth sports. I've got 3 kids. All of them are involved with about everything under the sun, and it's absolutely awesome. And also, the whole interfering with high school football thing, I don't dig. There's some stuff. You know what? Leave Thursday and Friday to high school football. College gets Saturday. NFL gets Sunday. About the only deviation from that I like is ESPN Thursday night football.
Yeah.
Give me one college game on Thursday night. Everything else has to go on Saturday.
So there you go. Of course, Illinois 2-1 lost to South Florida, which is unbeaten, ranked in the top 25. A crucial year for Lovie Smith because I think they're going to – people want to see, at least Illinois fans, if there are any Illinois fans, want to start seeing improvement. This was a pretty big hire for the new athletic director. Do you like Lovie Smith in the college game?
I don't, and part of the reason is because there's this NFL coaches – NFL football and college football are almost 2 different sports. In terms of how coaches approach them from a coaching standpoint, and it's tough to do. I got a huge amount of respect for what Lovie actually for what he did with the Bears. I mean, I actually thought he was a pretty good coach, and I thought it was a bad move to fire him. There's a reason he took the Bears to the Super Bowl. Had nothing to do with Cutler. Lovie was a very good NFL coach. I think he's a very okay college coach. I mean, would they get 3-9 last year?
Yeah.
I think, and that's one season. It'll be interesting to see how they do. I don't think Illinois's got a lot of – I don't think they've got a lot of real good horses to run the race with here. And we'll see what happens. But they're just a team that doesn't have a lot of talent right now. Now, are they better than Rutgers? Yes, they are. And that worries me about Nebraska going out there. The fact that Nebraska has to go out to – Champaign to play this game also worries me.
So does the week off for Illinois help or hurt? They're coming off that loss to South Florida. Does it help them to have that extra week of preparation?
At this point in the season, I don't think it does much for you. You know, if this was one of those things where this was, you got that bye week between the, wow, sound effects. You get that bye week between the 6th and 7th game, 7th and 8th game, I think it can really help you because you've got a couple of guys who are beat up that you're hoping you get back. I mean, if Nebraska had a bye week this week, I'd be all for it because you got some guys who are injured, banged up, hurt. It'd be nice as, hey, maybe this is all it'll take, extra week off, get Trey Bryant back, get the line a little bit healthier. We'll kind of see what happens with a couple of these defensive backs who are hurting. It could make a big difference for a team like Nebraska. A team like Illinois, the biggest thing they need right now is experience, continuity, and time on the field. And I think it almost kind of throws a little bit of a wrench in the works. Teams look kind of like first game of the season rust. Teams look a little rusty. Their timing's a little bit off. Having that timing down, having that rust knocked off is important this early in the season. I always hated early season bye weeks because it kind of messes with that timing and that continuity of things. Week 9 bye weeks were a good thing.
You know, we haven't spent a lot of time, and I don't want to. You know, if there's one thing I can do with control of this podcast, I'm not going to spend time talking about who the next coach could be because Mike Riley's still the coach. There's still a lot of season left, and he certainly could save his job. I don't think that's worth talking about. I know there's a lot of speculation about Scott Frost, all sorts of names getting thrown out there. Until there's
Scott Nuke in Maryland was kind of interesting.
That's true.
Maryland was a teammate. Not like Texas is good. But if you watch that Texas-Maryland game, Maryland was lighting it up. They've got some ball players. They've got some – I mean, they're not a horrible team by any means.
But Nebraska's not looking for a coach right now. And I don't think they will be until November, or even if so. They are looking for an athletic director. Trev Alberts' name's been thrown out. The World Herald had a list. It's an interesting position because I listen to a lot of former Huskers, Rob, and people are adamant that you got to be a former Husker or a former Nebraska guy. Listen, Bill Byrne was not a Nebraska guy.
He was a Michigan-Wyoming guy.
And he came from Oregon. He was the AD at Oregon when he came here.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was.
The AD? He was the coach at Wyoming.
No. Bill Byrne.
Oh, I thought you said Devaney.
See, now who's been drinking a beer?
Yes, I'm sorry. Bill Byrne. I apologize. I had Devaney seared into my soul.
No, Bill Byrne wasn't a Nebraska guy.
Bill Byrne.
And if you don't think Bill Byrne, and Bill Byrne wasn't wanted by Tom Osborne.
Oh, when he hit the door, nobody wanted him.
Yeah, and he did miracles. He created a culture of winning. And within the whole athletic department,
he had some very good hires.
Husker Vision. That's Bill Byrne's baby. Sweets, new press box, that's Bill Byrne's baby.
Nebraska baseball actually winning and going to the College World Series.
So you
that was Bill Byrne.
You don't have to be a Nebraska guy. What you have to do is have expectations, have a clear culture of what you want to do, and hire the very best people that you can. I will say this, and because nothing really new has come out, and if we hear anything from Dave, if Dave ever wants to join us, we'll talk about it. And Rob, I hope you agree with me. You swing for the fences on an athletic director, and if you have to go for a coach, you swing for the fences there. It doesn't have to be, but you want to get the very best people. Nebraska has the money. Nebraska has the resources. You swing for the fences.
When did Jamie Pollard come here?
When I'm talking swing for the fences, I'm talking a Joe Castiglione at Oklahoma. I'm saying, what do you got to lose? What? Don't think that you can't get somebody.
I like Castiglione.
I'm not saying you can get him.
I don't think he was the one who chased Bob Stoops out of town, but I think that was more the regions.
Well, I think a couple things. A, Bob Stoops' dad passed away about the same age on the sidelines of a high school football game. Bob Stoops' son is a senior, and he's sick and tired of recruiting. You might just need some time off. And you know what? Lincoln Riley.
How about Bob Stoops as a head coach?
That's what I'm talking about. Swing for the fences. It doesn't have to be a Husker guy. It doesn't. Go get the very best that you can get. If you got to pay $5, $6 million a year, do it.
Tom Just, Osmer was a Hastings guy.
But you know what I'm talking about? So, no, I mean, are you a former Husker that says it has to be a former Husker?
No.
Okay. Before I let you go, because I know you're kind of in a hurry, would you have kneeled for the national anthem?
No.
Okay.
I'm a stander.
And that's fine.
Now, here's the thing. Because this is a whole... We could talk.
I know,
a whole freaking podcast.
But you got to go pick up kids.
Here's a couple of points that I think are relevant. I firmly believe we live in the best country on the planet. I've heard a couple people say the United States is the greatest country in human history from a governmental standpoint. I love this country. You play the national anthem. I see the flag. I'm standing up no matter what. I'll also say this. Part of what makes this country so good is the fact that you can criticize the government. You can take a stand against the government. You can protest against the government. What is the worth of having the right to do that if you never exercise it?
That's true.
Do I disagree with how they're exercising that right? Yes, I do. I think there are other, more constructive ways to exercise the right. And what I mean by that, you know, if this is the only way you know how to protest, knock your socks off. But I think by doing this, by being a big name athlete, doing this, I think, and this has happened, in my opinion, this has happened. The focus comes off of the issue that's being protested and gets put more upon the action itself. We're talking about players kneeling during the national anthem. Nobody's talking about why.
Or what the actual solution is. Correct. I think we know why, but what's the solution they want?
But that's the thing. Hardly anybody's discussing the why, and nobody's discussing the, you hit a nail on a head right there. Nobody's discussing the how to fix it. We're all talking about what's happening. That's taken up 90% of the airwaves right now, and it completely distracts from the why and how to fix it. And that's in my mind almost a bigger problem. When the protest becomes bigger
than the message itself,
than what you're protesting, when the protest becomes bigger than the discussion of possible solutions, that's a problem. That's why I don't like it, and that's why I say I think there's more constructive ways to approach it. Now, do I have a problem with people protesting? No, knock your socks off. Would I kneel for the national anthem? You'll never see me kneel. Unless somebody smacks my knees with a lead pipe, you're not going to see me kneel for the national anthem. God bless America.
There you go. Good way to end the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. I want to thank Husker Max for being the official distributor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Get your Husker news 24/7, 365 at huskermax.com. We'll be back next week. Will we be talking about another Husker win or more turbulent times? And will there be any more headway on the athletic director search? It's the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. Talk to you next week.